Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help military veterans in their career transition to a civilian career. I do that by talking to veterans about their civilian career, what they do, trying to canvas as wide and broad a category as possible, how they got there, and advice for other veterans to help them succeed as well. Today is episode number 243 with Jared Shepherd.
So for me, I'm kind of the atypical guy to be where I'm at right now because, you know, I was a high school dropout, homeless kid living in the backseat of a car when I joined the Army to get off the streets. And so I didn't have the formal education or the pedigree that most people have professionally. But I had enough certifications that I could get a good job. And then my performance got me into a position of leadership and influence. But when my friend came and said, hey, you need to do this, I was like, there's no way. I have no idea how to do what you're talking about. I don't know how to run my own company. And he said, that's BS. Here, look. And he took his business card and he flipped it over and he wrote a couple websites on there. And he said, go do some research and then consider it.
Well, I really, really enjoyed my interview with Jared. It made me feel very fortunate for the work I do with Beyond the Uniform to be in front of people like Jared and just soak up some of their knowledge. And it also made me excited because I know if I got something out of this, I'm hopeful that many of you will benefit from this as well. Jared went from living on the streets to joining the Army to starting his own government contracting company that is now valued at over $50 million. It's a 190-person company. It's grown incredibly well in the last 12 years. He has a wealth of honest information for veterans aspiring to start their own company. We cover a lot about entrepreneurship, and he's got so many great sound bites. I was writing down notes for myself. I thought he talks about, you know, the two things necessary to be an entrepreneur is to be willing to take 100% at risk and 100%. I'm blanking on this already. 100% of your risk and 100% of your time. Those are the two qualifiers to know if you can start a company. And he also talks about gaining experience. He had 4 years in the space that he started a company and prior to starting a company and views that as essential to his path. He couldn't have done it without that. It's also an interesting interview because he's the founder of a nonprofit called Warriors Ethos, which helps wounded service members and their families in their career pursuits. So he's got a lot of perspective on starting a nonprofit, but also the challenges facing the veteran community. So strap in for an incredibly dense interview full of high-quality advice and a fair amount of inspirational stories. I think you'll really enjoy Jared's perspective. Let me know. Would love to try and get him back on the show if there's an interest from listeners to hearing more about this. Quick plug at beyondtheuniform.io. There are show notes for this episode. Thanks to Kathleen Dillon, there is a text transcript of our conversation, and we also have links to all the resources as well as over 242 other episodes just like this, absolutely free, that you can listen to anywhere, anytime, at your leisure. There is also the Beyond the Uniform coaching program. We connect you with subsidized, certified, executive, and career coaches trained to help you figure out exactly what you need to do in life next to make you happy. And that might be staying in the military, that might be getting out of the military, that might be being 10 years out of the military and figuring out what's next for you. Whatever it is, they have an incredible tool set to help you figure out what your values are and what you need to do next, and most importantly, to take action on that to make it happen. Check it out, beyondtheuniform.io, our coaching program. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Jared. Joining me today in Reston, Virginia is Jared Shepherd. Jared, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thank you very much, Justin. I appreciate it.
So for listeners, Jared is the CEO of a company called Intelligent Waves, and he's also the director and chairman of Warriors Ethos. Intelligent Waves is, let's start with Warriors Ethos. They're dedicated to providing assistance in the career planning, professional development, and placement of wounded service members, veterans, and their families throughout their transition. Intelligent Waves specializes in providing information technology and communication support to a wide variety of U.S. government customers. He spent 12 years in the Army as an infantryman and communications soldier, and he also worked as a government contractor before starting his own IT government contracting company. So, Jared, maybe to start things off, could you take us through your transition from the Army and what that first job search was like and what ultimately led you to this space?
Yeah, of course. One minor edit there is I was actually in the Army for right about 7 years, actually. I have been running my business now for a little over 12.
Oh, my apologies.
So,
yep.
It's okay. I figured where you got 12 from, but yeah, to flip that a little bit. Preparing to get out of the Army was not something that I did formally. In fact, it was kind of a rushed thing. In some ways, when you talk about the traditional ETSing and getting out of the military, but it was ultimately a decision that was made after I'd already made a different decision, because I originally joined the infantry, and I loved serving in the infantry. I loved putting on kit. I loved going out in patrols. I loved doing all the aspects of you know, really that side, the combat arms side of the Army, and what is later in my life become probably one of the most important decisions I ever made was by joining the infantry, because it taught me, you know, the fundamentals of leadership that I have carried with me for the rest of my life. But, you know, one of the harder decisions that I made was when I decided, you know, I was going to re-enlist and get out of the infantry and become a communications guy, because it was the opportunity to expand my education and have the potential to be able to do something after life in uniform. So I would almost say preparing to get out of the military started when I re-enlisted and changed my job. But when I actually got out of the Army, my last job in the Army, I was the comms NCO for a three-star general, the Corps commander of Fort Hood, Texas. And you know, due to the way that the life of a three-star works and the way that the Corps commander's activities were constantly, you know, on the move, and the rest of the staff was constantly on the move, I really actually didn't get to go to a lot of the preparation, you know, the classes and everything else like that, what we can now call the TAPS program. I didn't get to go to a lot of that. In fact, that'd be one of the first things I'd advise to anybody getting out of the military is, you know, when you make that decision to get out of the military, you've got to make time, you know, and I didn't, because I was still very mission first focused, and I didn't want to let my boss down. And I ended up kind of suffering for that a little bit when I first got out of the military, because I didn't do me. I didn't take a little bit of time for me. I didn't take a little time for me to, you know, for better planning for me. I didn't go do my VA, you know, my medical appointments to go get assessed if I was, potentially disabled in any way, shape or form. If I had received any kind of injury that I'd received compensation for, I didn't do a lot of those things that I should have done. Because I was so focused on the mission, and while that's valiant, and I'm sure, you know, many of the listeners out there, you know, feel the same way, but they don't ever want to walk away from the mission. You have to make time, you know, for yourself in that preparation.
That's great. And I hope for listeners, I think that's a broad takeaway. It seems like most of the people I've interviewed and most veterans, they're used to putting their team first and their team before themselves. And as you approach that transition, it's important to, you know, make sure that you're still doing your job, but also, like Jared's saying, make yourself a priority, make those needs a priority, make sure you're taking care of yourself, and that doesn't get lost in the shuffle.
That's right. And it doesn't change either. I mean, even when you get out of the military, no matter what your career is, you know, and for me, it's been, you know, man, how long has it been now? It's been almost 20 years since I've gotten out of the military. Just looking back on that in itself is the most important thing I've learned how to do as an entrepreneur, as a professional, as a leader, is to force myself to make time for myself and to force myself to make time for my leaders and to make my leaders make time for themselves. You know, and that's, you know, the Army kind of teaches you how to do that when you first start out. And maybe we in the military don't realize that's what they're teaching us, but just doing that PT in the morning, you know, yes, it's about combat readiness, but it's also about physical health, and physical health is mental health. And it's something that we have to maintain. So, you know, when you get out of the military, it's not time to eat a bunch of bonbons and, you know, kick your feet up. It's that physical health remains important for your mental health. And, it's something that, you know, now that the military doesn't force you to do it, you're going to have to learn how to teach yourself to make time to do that yourself.
I love that. I think that's such a great point. So I want to start by talking a little bit about Intelligent Waves, and we'll backtrack here in a second. But For listeners, you know, LinkedIn provides a lot of insight. So I was doing some snooping prior to the call, and Intelligent Waves has 135 employees on LinkedIn, and they've grown 57% in the last 2 years. So this is a very large, thriving organization. But Jared, just to maybe set the stage, if you bumped into someone who's on active duty on the streets, and they said, oh, tell me about what you do. What is Intelligent Waves? How would you explain what it is that you do?
Well, you know, you did a good job capturing. It's kind of interesting that you say, that you went out to LinkedIn, because that's something I think we'll talk about some, is the importance of using social media, and specifically like professional social media like LinkedIn. But, you know, I actually have, we're up to about 192 employees right now, which is awesome. And when I first got out of the military, you know, the first thing was, what was I supposed to do? Because I wanted to stay involved in the mission, right? And I wanted to have a larger impact than what I could have in uniform in itself. And so I thought I was going to go get a GS job, you know, and go become a GS, a civilian employee. And I figured, you know, hey, you know, to be honest, I was like, hey, I could kind of skip the line a little bit here. You know, I'm a sergeant in the Army. I'm going to get out as an E5, and I'm going to be able to skip the line and go get the job as a GS-13, GS-14. And my level of potential impact is going to jump greatly. And that was what I got, you know, essentially hired to do. You know, the actual Third Armored Corps brought me back as a contract consultant. And I had, you know, luckily as an IT guy, I had already had some certifications under my belt, and that ended up being key for my negotiation and for my very first job getting out of the military.
And I'm just curious, well, first of all, what?
You know what? I just realized I completely failed to answer your question.
No worries.
To answer your question, Intelligent Waves, you know, started out as a downrange IT services company, right? We were at war. I realized that you know, I had a couple of years worth of experience, you know, as a contractor before I started my company. I had a couple of years of experience. Already had gone downrange once as a civilian advisor. Had already built out, you know, part of Iraq from CJTF-7 into MNCI. And, you know, I had worked my way into a position where I was the lead technical consultant to the commander of 3rd Armored Corps. At the time, it was General Ray Odierno. And you know, ended up being presented with the opportunity to really help another DOD organization stand up. A friend of mine, you know, a friend and mentor who, you know, these are the people that will help us throughout our lives, is these friends and mentors that we have. That you may not realize will help you later, but they do. And one pulled me aside and said, hey, you know, Jared, we'd all, you know, all of us in the industry would love to hire you to come do this for us, but what you really need to do is start your company. And so when I started Intelligent Waves, I started it with the intent of supporting the warfighter, ultimately the mission, using whatever the most advanced technologies are that were available to me. But what Intelligent Waves became more over time, over the last 12 years, is Intelligent Waves is a impact-focused IT services company. So what we do is we use advanced technologies. We use advanced technology, you know, technical methodologies, whether it's cloud, whether it's cybersecurity, whether it's IT services, whether it's mobility, to help customers, you know, which customers, in our case, for the most part, is the federal government. We help them be more successful, more secure, and more impactful.
And was that... was it a hard decision when someone had suggested, hey, you should start your own? Was that difficult, or was that kind of a logical progression for you to kind of go off on your own?
Oh, it was terrifying. You know, so I was already lucky because, you know, in IT is one of the places that you know, education is the more important part of education in IT is certification than it is formal education. And so for me, I'm kind of the atypical guy to be where I'm at right now because, you know, I was a high school dropout homeless kid living in the backseat of a car when I joined the Army to get off the streets. And so I didn't have the formal education or the pedigree that most people have professionally. But I had enough certifications that I could get a good job. And then my performance got me into a position of leadership and influence. But When my friend came and said, hey, you need to do this, I was like, there's no way. I have no idea how to do what you're talking about. I don't know how to run my own company. And he said, that's BS. Here, look. And he took his business card and he flipped it over and he wrote a couple websites on there. And he said, go do some research and then consider it. And my boss at the time was a guy named Joe Anderson, who some of you may know as Fighting Joe Anderson, but at the time he was a colonel. And I went and talked to him, and I said, "Hey, you know, sir, I'm thinking about, you know, starting my own company." And he's like, "Oh no, no, there's no way you're coming back down range with us again." I was like, "No, sir, I'd come back down range. I'd just be coming back down range wearing my own t-shirt." And he's like, "Oh, well, I don't give a shit whose t-shirt you're wearing. You should do it." And that experience of even just making that decision, because when you start your own business, it's a risk decision. It's a huge risk decision. It's like, I'm going to take on all risk. And I get a lot of people who tell me, "Well, how much money did you need to start your business? What did it cost?" You know, and that's a very classic question. What does it cost to start your own business? And I think people misunderstand cost as being money. Instead, what I offer people a lot of times is to start your own business, if you choose to do so, it costs two things: 100% of your time, 100% of your risk. If you want to be successful in business, if you look at how many businesses are not successful, you can almost always draw it back to the fact that they were unable to do one or other of those two things. So many of you, if you're getting out of the military, you know, whether it's at 10 years or 20 years, and you have a wife and kids at home, it's going to be very difficult for you to be capable of offering 100% of risk and 100% of time. So, you know, be methodical in your approach, you know, and think that out before you make that jump.
What about, I know so many listeners aspire to entrepreneurship or considering that. Could you have started this directly from the Army? Like, how important was it to have those, what, 3 or 4 years doing the work before you went off on your own to start your own company?
I believe it was absolutely critical. And, you know, in my capacity in Warriors Ethos, when I'm mentoring guys, I get lots of guys that come and say, "Hey, Jared, I want to do what you did." Like, okay. What does that mean to you? Right. And often they think that means, "Well, I'm gonna go start my own business." And I'm like, "Well, it didn't quite happen just that way." And you know, to your point, no, I don't think I was prepared, and I have yet to really meet anybody who's completely prepared getting directly out of the military to start their own business. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And we could probably talk about that for an hour if you wanted to. But the biggest thing, more than anything, I think, is regardless of how long you spend in the military does a great job of preparing you for many things when you get out of the military. It teaches you leadership fundamentals. It teaches you responsibility. It teaches you accountability. It teaches you organizational functionality. So being able to actually function within an organization is an important trait, you know, not just being able to lead, but also being able to follow effectively. But these are all really, really good things for getting out of the military and being able to use in the commercial world. What you have not yet learned is one of the most important things that you're going to have to learn, and the military doesn't teach you, is money. And what money does to you, what it will do to the environment, what it does to business, what it does to people, the impacts of it, the effects of it. There is so much dynamic when it comes to the planning and preparation and the use of money that it is something that you need to have some experience with before you go and jump down that road. And it's not just saving money. It's not about what you personally do with money. It's understanding the effect of money on the human condition. And especially when you're running business and you're managing other people, the effect of the dynamics of money, negotiating money, contracting for money, paying money, taxes, healthcare, benefits, all those things are important to learn. Learning basic things like what is a wrap rate? I imagine probably most people on this phone call don't know what, you know, or on this cast can't understand what a wrap rate is, right? A wrap rate is if I am paying you. We'll keep round numbers to make it easy. If you're making $100,000 and I charge the government $150,000 for you, that's a wrap. So that means that's a 1.5 wrap. And the reason for that is understanding what's in that $50,000 is critical and why that's important, right? That's your overhead, your fringe, your GNA, your benefits, your profit. That's everything else that's in there. And oh, by the way, that's auditable by the government. So you have to have a methodology in how that was built. It has to be realistic. It has to be scalable. And oh, by the way, we talk about risk. If you've done it wrong, you still have to pay and you're still accountable to the contract. You can't come out and come back and say, "Hey, oh, sorry, just kidding. Sorry. My rate's not, you know, $85 an hour. It's $95 an hour." Because you will not only lose the work, but they may go after you for liability.
I'm just wondering, like, what resources helped you? So obviously having the actual experience in this job, and I love what you're saying. It seems like gaining this functional expertise gaining an understanding of money, and I love how you put that, money and its impact on the human condition. So having that deeper expertise helped you in this. Would there be any resources that you recommend to listeners, maybe someone who's out at sea or deployed, elsewhere, that they might be able to, is there any book that you would recommend, or podcast or conference or website, anything to help them just kind of start getting up to speed on anything that would help them to start their own company?
Sure. I mean, ironically, you know, YouTube is your friend, right? And so is LinkedIn. LinkedIn has some great stuff. They have some great media in there. LinkedIn has put a lot of time, energy, and effort. I've done, multiple hours worth of videos with LinkedIn, and so has like Florian Groberg, he's a Medal of Honor recipient, Ben Harrow, the guys from Hire Our Heroes. There's a lot of really good folks out there who have done really good content about preparation for separation, separating out of the military and knowing what's coming. YouTube is just one of those things. If you're interested in business, man, look it up on YouTube. I bet you there are aspects of it, how to start your own business, how to build a building rate, what is a wrap rate. You'll find collegiate classes. You'll find, people who are just doing podcasts who just want to share information. You'll also find people who swear to you they have the one and only answer of how to make this right. And always be cautious of anybody who says that this is the one way to do it, because there is no one way to do anything in the world. So it's use the internet as your research mechanism, but realize, especially in a world like today, no one source is good enough. Right. So anything that you find, trust but verify, find multiple sources. We've talked to you a couple times, the idea of LinkedIn. LinkedIn has an entire education activity for veterans. Go and explore that. Spend a little time in that and bounce around and figuring out what you want to do. On Warriors Ethos side of the house, what we always advocate for is any of our veterans in transition. We want them to go and do some fellowship time or some internship time before they ever actually jump in with both feet and do the job. And that's for this same reason is what is it now? It's like 88% or so. I don't want to quote the exact statistic, but it's in the high percentages that most veterans separating from the military do not stay in the first job that they get when they get out of the military. And that has the reason for that, more than anything, is because we don't know what we're getting into. Right. And the minute we actually get into that first thing, we kind of go, had I known this, I would have done it differently. I would have negotiated it differently. I would have asked for something different. I would have done something different, whatever it happens to be, right? So the more and more that we can prepare ourselves by learning, the better the chances are that first negotiation will be a more effective negotiation. That first interview will be a more effective interview. That first job will be a job that I want to do.
Could you just give, for context for listeners, too, the day that you started Intelligent Waves, how long was it until, roughly, just how long was it until you had money coming in? And then how long was it until you could actually pay yourself some money or have some sort of salary?
Good questions, and part it's because it's one of the mistakes I see a lot of people make. I was told this very early on, and I didn't realize the importance of it until after, looking back at it in hindsight. When I started the company, I really started it, from a cost standpoint. I took all my savings, and one of my buddies gave me most of his savings because he believed in what I was doing, and that was pretty much what I started with, right? And from a cost standpoint, just to get me out the door, I have one employee besides myself. Within 2 months, I'm talking to my one employee saying, "Hey, man, I don't have the money to pay you yet. Can I just write checks to all your bills and make sure, I don't want you to fall behind in your bills, of course. I would, you give me all the information for your bills and I'll pay all your bills for you. But the actual income side of the house, can you give me another week or 2 weeks, to do that?" And luckily, he, part of the reason why he came to be my first employee was because we had a good relationship and he trusted me. So he said, we could do that. And I think what that was symptomatic of, again, my lack of understanding what business was and my lack of understanding money, my lack of understanding and how contracts worked, all those things I didn't know. And in hindsight, I wish I would have known better. But to answer your question, I didn't get my first dollar in paid. It was nearing 80 days there. And that's, that's a long time to be in a remote environment, because when I started my company, I started it from Iraq. In Iraq, I deployed into Iraq as my first thing I did was I went with what was called the Joint IED Defeat Organization, JIDO. Me and my first employee stuff went downrange to Iraq. And so, you know, not only am I cheating costs to, you know, buying $3,000 airline tickets to get us into where we have to go to meet with our military partners, you know, luckily I didn't have rent to pay because, you know, we were living there on base. But you know, every other associated cost, I mean, just because I couldn't pay my employees didn't mean the IRS didn't want to be paid. And it didn't mean that the insurance man didn't want to get paid. And, you know, I had to have insurances to be down there. So, you know, all those things had to still be done, and I had to find ways to do that. Now, that was a tough uphill battle.
What is your – I think this is really helpful, and I also want to kind of give listeners a – glimpse into your life now. And so you are 12 years into this company. What is your day-to-day life look like? What's the, like, just even picking a random day, what time do you start? What sort of activities do you do throughout the day? What time do you end? Is this still, you know, 100 hours a week? What does life look like?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, it's still 100 hours a week. I tend to lean towards, Elon Musk's, you know, statement that he made, you know, not long ago, where he said, you know, if you want to change the world, it'll take over 80 hours a week. And I agree with that. But it's not the 80 hours a week that you think it used to be. You know, it's not 80 hours a week punching a clock and sitting behind a desk. It's 80 hours a week because we have the mobility of technology and the flexibility of technology now. So it's, you know, for instance, just a couple of weeks ago, I brought my girls to Disney World for Halloween. But I was able to take conference calls from the ride lines, you know, and be able to interact, you know, in that way. And that's part of being a business owner. It's part of being a CEO. It's part of being a leader. But it's also part of just being ambitious in business, whether you're in sales or anything else like that, being able to be flexible, but still make time. So the two things I was accomplishing in doing that was I was spending time with my kids. And that comes back to what I was telling you about, you know, making personal time. You have to. But B, I was also able to still find ways in which to do pieces of business while I was doing that, and do so in a non-disruptive way. And it was, you know, effective for me and for my business. So for me, an average day, you know, I wake up usually around 6:30 in the morning. My girls are my alarm clock, so they tend to come in and wake me up. I go down and hit the gym. I try to work out for anywhere from 4 to 5 days a week. I go down, I hit the gym, I shower, change, usually get on a conference call, head into the office. And I'm in and out of meetings. I generally eat lunch in the office, or I eat lunch at a meeting somewhere. As a CEO, most of my day is composed with, I hate to say it, but meetings for the most part. Because it's meeting with other leaders that are making decisions that they're asking me for guidance, direction, or authorization to continue to do what they're doing. And you know, that comes down to a lot of just empowering your leaders to be successful, right? Mm-hmm. And then I generally depart my office around 7 o'clock at night. So, you know, that's my Monday through Friday on average. I just hit platinum elite status again in Marriott Rewards, so you know that means I've spent a fair amount of time in on the road and in hotels. I think for Platinum Elite, that means I literally, this is the end of the year, so I literally just hit, I think it's like 50 or 60 days, you know, 50 or 60 nights in hotels. So you know, there's a fair amount of time on the road there too. Mm.
You are a difficult person to interview, in that there are, I am so much appreciating your perspective on everything. There's so many things I want to go into, and yet we're only partway through your story, because you've also got Warrior's Ethos. So we may come back to Intelligent Waves, because I feel like there's so much here and you have so much perspective to provide for listeners. But let's switch gears just for a second about Warrior's Ethos. So I'm guessing you're 7 years in at Intelligent Waves when Warrior's Ethos comes along. Is that something that you founded or that you joined? how did Warrior's Ethos come about?
So I'm 12 years into IW. I'm about 5 years into Warrior's Ethos now.
Yep.
What had happened was, you know, and it's kind of a neat story. So when I started the company, and I told you I was down here, I am down in Iraq. I built the first ever COIC, which is the counter IED operational intelligence center. there in Camp Victory, for those of you who have been there, you know, and we physically built it. I literally had blood, sweat, and tears in there, and my first employee and I built that place out from a technical capability standpoint, and we're doing our very first counter IED battle update brief to the boss, and the boss is General Odierno, and you know, General Odierno comes in and takes his brief, and it was really high speed, you know, big theater with VTC cameras from all the division commanders and everything else like that. We're talking about the effects and the impact of IEDs in the battlefield and how to try to get at the people that are putting them there. And at the end of it, you know, he says, hey, I, you know, it's not often I get to face my commanders, you know, get to talk to all my commanders at once. Would everybody please excuse me? I'd like to have some conversation with my commanders. And, you know, because in the battlefield, it's difficult for him to actually be able to see face-to-face all of his commanders that are dispersed across Iraq. And so everybody leaves, you know, and I'm talking about everybody. I'm talking about everybody leaves. This is a huge JOC, you know, Joint Operations Center, you know, 80-something seat, you know, tiered theater, and everybody leaves. And as I'm getting ready to leave, he's like, no, Jared, you make lights blink. I don't make the lights blink. You got to hang around. Okay. Roger that, sir. So I had an opportunity to be in this update between him and just his general officers, and be a fly on the wall. Right. And he, you know, I don't want to, you know, reveal the full thing that he revealed, but what he ultimately said was, you know, his personal impact on IEDs and his priority and the protection of our troops and our soldiers and how important that was. And, you know, he, I don't know if you know much about General Odierno, but it's real to him, not just as a commander, it's someone who's lived his entire life to protect his troops, but his own son actually lost an arm in an RPG hit in Iraq as well. So it was a very, very important thing to him. But one of the things that I realized that my epiphany came from this speech that he gave to his commanders was that, you know, when we're raised with the idea that the ultimate sacrifice is dying for your country. And I had this epiphany in listening to him that that's not the only ultimate sacrifice. The ultimate sacrifice, I believe, is coming back as something less than what you were, you know, mentally, emotionally, physically, you know, and of course in death. When we die in service for our country, it's such a dramatic sacrifice that there's nothing we can ever do to give back to that family. There's no hole that we can fill there. There's nothing that we as a country or as a government or as a military that we can ever do to compensate for the loss of a family member. But there's other aspects of sacrifice too. When someone comes back as an amputee and they're physically less than what they were when they went, they're going to have to wake up every morning for the rest of their life and repeat that sacrifice in some form. The when you talk about people who come back who are emotionally or mentally, you know, the invisible wounds of war, who are going to carry a baggage and burden for the rest of their life in the idea of service of their country, and it literally changes who they are. It changes the material of who they are. That is a sacrifice that is made that most of us don't understand when we go into war. And I decided, you know what, this is back when, like I said, I'm starting out. This is me and my one other employee. I'm sitting there thinking to myself, man, if I ever get to be successful, I'm going to find a way to give back and make a difference. And so I did. As the company grew over the next year, 2 years, at about, I think about month 20 or so, 22, I have to go back and look. But I decided that I was going to write a check to the Wounded Warrior Project. And, you know, Wounded Warrior Project was the big name that was out there at the time. And I actually, you know, ironically, General Odierno had come back and, you know, him and I, you know, had a good relationship, professional relationship. I'd even say a friendship because he had mentored me in a lot of things. And I asked him to come and present the check to Wounded Warrior Project for me. And we had raised, you know, between me and my employees and then my personal donation, it was, I think, $124,000 that we donated to Wounded Warrior Project. And that was the first donation that I had made, and ended up being the first of many donations that I made to the Wounded Warrior Project. As with any organization, and I'm sure people have heard, you know, bad things about the Wounded Warrior Project and about, you know, money going to, you know, how much of the money goes to the soldier, right? You know, how much of the donated money actually goes to the soldier versus what does it go to everybody else? And I eventually got there after a few years. I was the second largest donor to their annual gala 2 years in a row, to only beat by Geico. You know, and I had given them a lot of money, and we were exploring whether I was going to be on the board of directors with them. And I kind of wanted to ask the question that everybody else I had heard starting to ask about how that money was getting down to the soldier. And I learned something very important about a nonprofit, which, you know, I warned you about my ability to go down rat holes here, but it's important for all those of you out there who interact with nonprofits is, you know, people tend to go to the 990s and they look at it and they go, oh, you know, only, you know, 70 cents on the dollar goes to the soldier. So where is that other 30 cents going? Well, you know, Wounded Warrior Project was faced with a very unique problem in that, you know, when somebody donated the Super Bowl spot to them, that was like a $3.8 million donation. But they couldn't use it for anything other than the Super Bowl spot. So that meant it went on the books as a donation, and it had to be used as a commercial. And so then people would misconstrue that and think, well, that's money they're wasting that could be going to a soldier. Well, not really, right? You know, I mean, they had huge momentum, and they were growing very rapidly as a nonprofit with the ability to do a lot of great things for soldiers. But with anything that grows very, very rapidly, it starts to produce some internal problems and organic problems. And when I got a chance to look at the books, I learned that thing that the 990 is not a good interpretation of what a nonprofit is doing. But I also saw some other things that I didn't personally like. And one of them was the executive compensation in the organization at the time. And I decided that it would be better that I depart and go find either another nonprofit or, you know, do something else. And so we parted ways, and I think, you know, the Wounded Warrior Project over time learned from that lesson. In fact, they kind of rebooted a lot of leadership. A guy named Mike Linnington's in there running it now, and he's doing a great job. I think he's cleaned up that you know, some of the again, just the knots that occur when an organization grows so quickly. You have to shake those knots out eventually. And I think Mike's done a really good job of coming in and helping clean up the Wounded Warrior Project and get it on the, you know, not that it was ever truly off the tracks, but get it on the tracks to doing, you know, great things for veterans. But in the meantime, I was still supporting the other nonprofit that I support, which is the Special Operations Warrior Foundation, which is a great one as well. And I happened to go to a gala and I meet this young man in a wheelchair, and I'm talking to him, and he's a comms guy like me. And you know, all right, so he's an E6, he's a comms guy, and he's in a wheelchair. And I'm like, well, so what's the story? And he got hit by an IED, one of the scariest injuries I could ever tell a story about, I'll tell you guys. But yeah, I'll simplify it by saying he got hit by an AED, and then maybe another time I can tell you what actually happened to him, and it'll scare the crap out of you. But he was paralyzed, and he was the USASOC, U.S. Army Special Operations Command commander's RTO. And he's like, I'm like, well, what's your plan? He's like, I don't have a plan. I'm paralyzed. I was a tactical comms guy, so I'm not really a computer guy, right? I don't have those skills, and now I'm paralyzed, and I'm being left alone. And I'm a single father, and I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I'm like, well, shit, happens to be I own an IT company. And so I went over to General McChrystal at the time, actually, and said, hey, sir, you got to give me that kid. And he says, well, I'm getting ready to depart. You know, Bill McRaven's coming in. Let me introduce you to him. And so he went over and introduced me to Bill McRaven. And I said, hey, sir, I got an IT company. You got to give me that kid. I can help. And he was like, oh, okay, great. We have this thing called the CARE Coalition. Let me introduce you to him. He introduced me to the guy named Kevin McDonald, who was running it at the time, and ultimately gave him permission to allow me, and, you know, this is my capacity as the CEO of Intelligent Waves, allow me to mentor some wounded, you know, Special Forces community guys that are up at Walter Reed. And so fast forward a couple of months, and I got four wounded SF guys, you know, in my office, you know, coming into my office 3, 4, 5 times a week. And, you know, a guy in a wheelchair, a double leg amputee, an arm amputee, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it was awesome for my culture, you know, for the culture of my office, having these guys come in and learn, just, you know, just get the edge off of the fear of what's on the outside, right? You know, learn that they get that first corporate exposure while they're recovering, while they're going through healing, while they're preparing for transition. And I get a call from SOCOM commander, the JAG, the lawyer, and he goes, hey, can you tell me how you're not spending more than, what is it, $28 a month that you're allowed to spend on a government employee? How you're not spending more than $28 a month on those guys? And I'm like, well, why would you call me and ask me that question, right? You know, I mean, I'm doing good things. Leave me alone. And he said, no, we get it. The boss gets it, but you need to provide the boss some overhead cover. You gotta play within the rules. I'm like, well, what are you talking about? He said, well, why don't you start your own nonprofit? Well, okay, I never thought of that. All right, shit, I'll be into that. That would work. And we had really good ties inside of the SOCOM community and inside of the wounded SOCOM community specifically. So we ended up starting Warriors Ethos. And the idea, more than anything, was about, you know, that first guy, Antonio, you know, was about, hey, how do we help guys successfully get out of the military and go into something else? Because, you know, we were losing a time, 22 veterans a day, you know, to suicide. And when you listen to all the negative things that are out there about veterans, you know, suicide, unemployment, homelessness, underemployment, divorce rate, you know, all those things. And if you've ever spent any time in Walter Reed around wounded, you see those things real time. You know, you see guys that are in a place of self-loathing because they've lost part of who they were and they're trying to re-identify with that. Who do they take it out on? You know, more than anything, they take it out on their wives. You know, they take it out on their loved ones, the people, their spouses that are around them. And that makes that difficult, right? And then, of course, they don't mean to. So then when their wives finally go, this is enough, I can't handle it anymore, then they realize, well, now I've screwed that up too, right? I mean, that puts these guys in really dangerous places that we have to help them navigate. And so I started Warriors Ethos with the intent and the desire to do exactly that, right? Get some of these guys out of the hospital, get some of these guys in a situation in which they don't fear what's coming next, you know. And I talk to them and I treat them just like I did as an infantry NCO. You know, hey, guys, don't worry about whether the grass is green over the, you know, greener on the other side of the fence. It's just fucking grass. Get over the fence. And that was my first lesson to them is you know, don't focus on what it is. Just do it. Get over the objective, right? Get over the fence. And I learned a lot of other lessons along the way of, you know, okay, well, there's other questions that have to be answered, right? You know, financial questions. I mean, most soldiers, you'd be amazed. How many veterans that are listening to this call, how many of you have a developed budget, right? How many of you have sat down and understand what it actually costs to live? Not what you want, not what you think you need, what you actually need. You know, what could you survive on if you get out of the military and your first job opportunity is a great job opportunity, but it requires you to take a $10,000 a year pay cut? Can you afford to do it? Could you afford to do it? If I also tell you that when you get out of the military, you're going to have to pick up $600 a month in medical costs because now you don't get free healthcare. Now, could you afford to do it? Do you know yet? That's a hard thing that, you know, I think a lot of veterans need some help in. And that was ultimately the genesis of Warriors Ethos. And it's the focus of the curriculum. It's the focus of what we teach. It's the focus of what we do with internships is helping guys and gals that are transitioning out of the military prepare for that, prepare for those hard questions, come up with a plan and find a way that they can identify that next mission. Right. You know, cause that's what we did in service is, you know, in service, we all raised our right hand and said, I swear to support and defend the Constitution of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Right. We all did that. But what we were really saying, we knew when we were joining the military, we were saying, hey, look, I'm willing to trade suck for God and country. Right. I'll take on suck for God and country. What nobody told us was when we got out of the military, still sucks. And now we don't have God and country anymore. So ensuring that veterans, you know, and people transitioning out of the military, find a way to find that next mission, that next milestone, that next objective. That's critical, right? You know, all of you listening to this that are listening to this because you're in a transition state of some kind. You know, transition is just one state of activity to another. It is not something ending. It's just changing the activity. You know, every one of you have to figure out what's going to wake you up in the morning and what's going to motivate you. Is it going to be your education? Is it going to be your family? Is it going to be financial reward? Is it going to be professional reward? Is it going to be impact in some way? There's got to be something. And you, whatever that is, you got to reach down and grab a hold of it. And it doesn't have to be the same answer all the time. Oh, by the way, the first answer doesn't have to be the right answer. Your first job is not your last job. So, I mean, that's why transition is such an important thing, because all those negative things that we hear about, those things can all be affected by a good transition program. Those things can all be affected by someone who is prepared or is enabled to, through the tools and the methodologies that are available to them, enabled to transition successfully, right? We can reduce the risk of all of those things from suicide to underemployment.
This is great. You know,
sorry, Justin, I can go on.
Great. No, I love it. I mean, I appreciate so much about what you said on the interview. I love what you said about 100% of your time and 100% of your risk and your advice around entrepreneurship. I love what you had said about how the ultimate sacrifice is coming back as less than what you were. I think that's an incredible perspective. I really think that you're spot on too around just just get over the fence. Don't worry about grass is greener. Just get over the fence, like, and not worrying about that first job. And so, you know, I know we've covered a lot of ground today, but I always like to keep the last question just more open-ended, which is, you know, before we wrap up, what have we not covered that you want to make sure that listeners know today?
Oh man, there's a ton. You know, it's hard to do this, you know, and one of my very first mentors, you know, and I think that's what I'm going to leave you guys with, but one of my very first mentors told me the idea of mentorship, right? He had taught me so many other things, and I realized it, you know, and he was the guy that kind of helped me get off the streets. He was the guy that, you know, using reverse psychology convinced me to join the military. You know, and he really saved my life in a lot of ways. And I told him, I said, how do I give back? And he said, well, you know, you're responsible to do so. That's the price for this, right? You know, I was asked him, what do I owe you for all the things that you've done for me? And he said, well, what you owe me is you're going to have to do this when it's inconvenient. You're going to have to do this when it's inopportune. You're going to have to do it when you don't want to, or you don't have time, or that it takes away from something else that you want to do. And you're going to have to do this for other people. This is your responsibility as a mentor, as a mentoree, to become a mentor and to help other people who need help at some point. And it'll never be when it's convenient for you. It'll never be when it's easy for you. And one of the most important things about mentoring someone that you have to walk away with is that, you know, you're going to give them a lot of information and they're not going to take more than about 10% of it. And you have to be okay with that as a mentor, because if you're not, then you're going to get too frustrated and you won't be able to be successful as a mentor. But if you look at it in the grand scheme of things, if people just take away 10% of what they get from somebody who's teaching them something, it will continuously correct and improve their path. And you know, a large ship only makes corrections in increments at a time, right? That 10% is critical. It's huge. And so what I would leave you all with is that the most important thing that you guys have out there is there's this massive base of mentorship. I used to think that, you know, I am where I am today. You know, I'm running a $50+ million company. I'm building a product company that could very well be $1 billion. I'm running my own nonprofit. I have a great family. I'm living a life I never dreamed of having. You know, going from being a homeless kid to being what I am today. I'm blessed in every aspect of blessed, no matter how, you know, how you believe. But I used to believe it was just a couple of specific mentors that I was just so lucky to have that enabled me to get to where I'm at. And I've realized instead that it's not. It's being receptive to mentorship. And this is what I'd offer to every one of you is you have to think about, are you truly receptive to mentorship? Are you truly receptive to learning from anybody around you? Because I'll tell you, you could learn from the janitor. You could learn from anybody around you. And what you will find is that if you can flip that switch and be receptive to people who want to help you, you will find that you are surrounded by people who want to help. They're everywhere. There are. I think you can ask almost anybody who ever said they served on the street. And if you said, hey, I need some help, they will stop what they're doing and they will help you. There are, you know, the idea of helping a veteran is not uniquely veteran. That doesn't mean you have to serve to understand the veteran condition. There are plenty of patriots in America that care and that will stop and that will help. But you have to have the ability to ask for help. You have to have the ability to, in an intelligent way, articulate your problem and ask for help. And then listen to what you're being told. You're not expected to just walk away with 100% of what they tell you. Again, I come back to the 10% thing. But you have to be able to be receptive to information that people are willing to give. And there's reasons like podcasts like this. They're not doing this because they're making money. They're doing this because they want to help. And if you're willing, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you're already going down the right path. But you have to make sure that your entire life, you know, everything that you're doing is you're receptive to people who have information that you may or may not have. I've built my company around the idea of surrounding myself with people who are smarter than me. And I have, you know, multiple people who work for me now, guys that were colonels that I worked for that work for me now. And the reason for that is because we have professional respect for each other. And I realize that they have things to teach me. And they've taught me a lot of things over the years and they continue to teach me. So I would offer to every one of you, you know, as my last parting shot is be receptive to mentorship. Don't expect the world from it and don't expect the one right answer. But if you ask enough questions to enough people, you'll learn a lot. And then, you know, apply it. Don't be afraid to apply it. If it doesn't hit the first time, try again. You know, this world is not a completely unforgiving one, right? As scary as it may be, you can make a mistake and recover from it. So, you know, I think that's probably what I would leave you with is just be receptive to that mentorship and be receptive to applying what you learn.
I love that. And I love that coupled with your thought earlier about the amount of information there is now and just kind of getting as much information from as many sources as possible and not, you know, and I love that sense that I get from when you're talking about just not taking things so seriously. I understand most listeners are going from a world of extremely high consequences and, you know, what I hear and what you're saying and from my own experience is that the business world is a little bit more like bumper cars than it is like, you know, full out death, high stakes type of thing. And there's room to make mistakes and there's room to not like your job and to switch your job. And there's just not the extreme consequences that most people are acquainted with in the military. And Jared, I just want to appreciate your time on this. I just feel like we tapped into this deep reservoir of knowledge and experience. And I just appreciate not just the wisdom that you've accumulated. And I realize just kind of the wounds and the scars and the blood, sweat, and tears that have gone into all of the tidbits that you've shared, but also just kind of the honesty and directness and practical nature with which you deliver the advice. And so it makes me proud to be doing this podcast. I feel like I learned a lot from this, and it makes me excited because I know that our listeners will learn a lot. And I can only imagine running a company of your size, how many demands are on your time. But I appreciate your, you know, carving out the time to do Warrior's Ethos and continue to give back, but also making time for Beyond the Uniform with this interview.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and I appreciate that you guys are doing this kind of a thing because, you know, this is what I was telling you about, right? This is what my first mentor told me, right? This is veterans giving back to veterans for the sake of veterans, right? And it's not because we're profiting off of each other, but it's because we care about each other. Hmm. And that camaraderie can't die. And I think it's something that you know, as long as we continue to take care of each other, you know, we need veterans to be successful in life, right? We need veterans to be successful leaders. We need them to be successful leaders in business, in government, that we need them to be successful at home. You know, those things are important.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond the Uniform. There are over 200 free episodes at beyondtheuniform.io. They're classified by the industry of focus, the functional role the person plays, and more. Beyond the Uniform is hosted, produced, and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our director of outreach, responsible for sponsorship and guest episodes, is Steve Bain. Our editor, responsible for the show notes and text transcripts for all episodes, is Kathleen Dillon. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge. If you are enjoying Beyond the Uniform, you can help us out by telling your veterans and friends in the military about this free resource. There is more information on the website about how you can sponsor an episode or donate to our program to help us grow the work that we're doing. Be sure to check out the coaching section of beyondtheuniform.io, where you can be paired with professional, subsidized coaches to help you figure out your next career move. You can sign up for our newsletter to be up to date on the latest happenings at Beyond the Uniform. And in each show notes section, there is a link to audible.com, which is providing a free audiobook of your choice to Beyond the Uniform listeners. You get a free book of your choosing, and Beyond the Uniform gets $15 to subsidize the cost of the show, regardless of whether you continue with audible.com or not. Check that out and more in the show notes for this episode. Keep the feedback coming. Let me know what resources would help you in your career, and we'll do our best to make that happen. Take care, be safe, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.